Hi, my name is Deb Quintel. I'm the Director of Curriculum Development at CALI, and today I am speaking with Professors Grohman and Brown from Shepherd Broad Law Center at Nova Southeastern University. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
Thank you. Today we're talking about covenants in the area of property, and I need to ask you what the actual rule is behind covenants, to start us out, if I could.
To say the rule,
the rule is
an oversimplification. There are a number of rules, but let's focus. We're talking about real covenants and servitudes, which are connected with land so that they either benefit or burden successors in ownership. And that's the focus of this discussion.
Okay, that sounds great. Now, the two of you have written a number of CALI lessons, I know, and maybe you could suggest a sequence for students to work through the lesson, or give us just an overview of how you expect students to approach this material.
There seems to be in the general materials, both in the case books and the horn books and the like, a lack of a logical development as to how one would go ahead and analyze the various issues that arise regarding covenants, equitable servitudes, and various restrictions on real property. Often the cases and materials seem to presume certain things to be applicable when there's no discussion of it at all, so that in teaching it or studying it, one overlooks that. So what the CALI lessons attempt to do is to devise a system that would have a logical developmental pattern to it. For instance, the first question really ought to be the issue of creation. How does one create this? Do we have a covenant at all? Is often a question. Many of the cases seem to take that for granted. Another question that arises regarding covenants is, if you do have that covenant or equitable servitude or restriction, is it one that really is valid? This may come up as a defense question, and certainly would be appropriate to raise it that way, but you could also raise it at the very beginning with this question of whether it's an unreasonable burden on the estates. And if that's the case, then the courts aren't going to enforce them anyway. Often what's complained about is an activity that is not proscribed at all by the restriction. And that's another question. That's the scope question that comes up in the CALI lessons. Sometimes what we're complaining about is not something that's prohibited by the covenants. If we do have all of that, then there are certain litigation questions. One deals with having standing, a party who actually has the right to go ahead and enforce that covenant. Another is, do you have a proper party against whom to enforce that? And then last of all, and involved in all this litigation, is the question of what are the usual defenses involved? So that even though you might have all the other answers as yes, this one may be you just simply can't enforce it here because of a particularly applicable defense that's available.
And so for students studying property, what they find frustrating or surprising is, first, they're asked to put into use contract doctrine that they have learned in a different course. So they go, what's this doing in this course? So we have contract creation, we have contract defenses. And then we're talking about civil procedure questions. And once again, they go, wait, this is property. How come you're raising civil procedure issues or questions? And the answer is that really it's all interconnected. We have artificially divided material into courses so that we can put it into a law school curriculum for scheduling purposes, but when we get to the reality of the law, they are not divided, they are all interconnected.
So is this one of the challenges then for students, one of the things that makes it difficult to learn covenants?
Absolutely.
Particularly in first year, where they may be at that moment still learning the civil procedure, or that moment still learning the contracts, and then we're simultaneously asking them to put what they're learning into effect in this other course.
The real question, or one of the real differences between contracts and dealing with real covenants, is that a real covenant essentially raises the issue as to whether somebody who never made the promise at all may be stuck with the burden of that promise, or someone who was never the original beneficiary of the promise may be someone who has the right to enforce it later on simply because of their interest in some real estate.
This is a phenomenon that's referred to in real estate law as substitution, where a grantee has received an estate and therefore is substituted for the grantor. That is, put in the shoes of the grantor for all rights and privileges connected with the land. But that raises big questions. is this one of the rights, privileges, or and also burdens that's connected with the land? That requires some analysis. And so this raises a number of sub-issues that each has to be addressed individually, and each for both the benefit side and the burden side. And so when students look for a quick solution or a quick fix to the question of, can this person enforce this this promise, and can this person be held responsible for the performance, the answer is, it depends. And it depends on the analysis of a number of issues which have to be addressed in logical order. And that's what the Cali lessons do. They break it down into a sequence of logical elements to be addressed one at a time.
And as a result, they're more likely to cover far more than a professor might cover in a property class. But it's necessary information in order to really understand the concept. Because as one moves out of the first year in fundamental property, they'll more likely get into some other courses that will involve land use and restrictions. And all of this will come into play at a much higher level. And this gives them a solid foundation for it.
Do you also use these lessons in your real estate courses?
I do. And I have a real estate closing workshop, and I use it with them because a lot of the simulations that I give them involve restrictions on the use of the land. When I do real estate transactions, that's one of the issues that will come up, and I'll assign the Cali lessons.
And I also use the Cali lessons in the advanced real estate transactions, also called real estate finance law, which is primarily mortgages and mortgage substitutes, how to get the money and where it is and who's affected, whose security is affected. And you can see an example of some of the problems when we talk about mortgages, where a person uses that land as collateral to secure an obligation, subjects it to a mortgage, and then the property is sold or granted or left in a will to somebody else, and that somebody else somehow finds themselves subject to the mortgage. Well, why are they subject to the mortgage? Because of the doctrine behind real covenants. And why are they not necessarily subject to the promise made in the note, which the note secures? Because the analysis of the very same elements usually leads to a different conclusion. And that's another example of a situation in which this doctrine arises in another course. It makes for interesting work throughout law school.
Earlier, I think with Professor Brown, you spoke of burdens. And when I think of burdens, I also think of easements, and I'm wondering if either of you could distinguish covenants from easements, because now I'm becoming rather confused.
Both of us can, but I'll let Joe try.
For the most part, in modern property use, easements relate particularly to the right of someone who's not an owner in the property or having any interest in the property, still being able to come on the property and make some use of it, except for a very limited number of what would be called negative easements. Whereas with the covenants and the equitable servitudes that we talk about today, we're talking about the property owner or someone who has an interest in the land having a limitation on their use of that property. So normally with covenants, there's nobody coming on your property and making use of it. You're having a restriction on what you can do with it. Whereas generally with the easements, most of it is allowing someone else to come on the land, except in very few cases with negative easements.
A more important point to make is that it's critical for the student to understand the concept of equity as opposed to law, because typically the relief for at law for breach of a covenant is damages. And typically what the owner or the beneficiary of a servitude or restrictive covenant wants is to prevent the violation, which means going into equity for an injunction. And understanding the basics of equitable relief, what it takes to get equitable relief, to qualify, there are prerequisites that the person seeking equitable relief must have clean hands, must not have an adequate remedy at law, and then that the equities must balance in his favor, is a different type of analysis than whether or not the person is entitled to damages. So understanding this distinction, which is based on history, the history which has had such an important impact on real estate law under our system, is critical for a student, and it's very difficult for first-year students who frequently encounter this distinction for the first time to both process that and then put it into effect in determining whether the real covenant can be enforced against a successor or by a successor.
And also what complicates it further is, again, modern America. Some of the covenants are affirmative covenants, where the property owner must do something in relationship to the property. A good example of that might be a condominium structure where you must pay your monthly maintenance fees or your dues to your condominium association. And two things that the association wants to get in any litigation will be back payments that are due in the form of damages and any interest and the like due on that, but also a mandatory injunction ordering that tenant, that condominium unit owner, to continue to make future payments. So you have this mix which will thoroughly confuse first-year students.
And then usually gets complicated because there's also a promise to subject the property to a lien should there be a failure to make the payments. And that lien becomes a burden. So we have a number of complicated things involved in this situation, which may at first glance have seemed so simple, and for which the student therefore expects a simple answer. And it's that expectation that can lead to a good deal of the frustration and confusion.
And that's why you really do need to develop a logical approach. You need something to give you direction, a roadmap, some way that you can deal with it topic by topic, and then add up all your answers to the different topics so that you can come to a logical overall conclusion.
Is there an analytical framework that I can apply try and determine whether a covenant exists?
The lessons in Cali do point that out. The suggested sequence in the Cali lessons on covenants is to deal with the creation one first, making sure that you have some form of a restriction that's there. Then look to see the breadth of that restriction, what's the scope of that restriction, and look to see whether it creates an unreasonable burden on the estate. Presuming you overcome those burdens, then you get into your litigation questions of having the proper party to bring the lawsuit or to enforce that, the benefit of that restriction, making sure you can identify the appropriate person or persons against whom to enforce it, and then ultimately raise the question as one would in almost any litigation, and that is, do we have any defenses that apply here? And that's the suggestion that's put in the Cali lessons.
Do you have any final words of advice for students as they try and master this area of covenants? You've talked about remedies law, you've talked about contracts, civil procedure. It seems like a lot of material has to be wrapped into covenants. What would be your final bit of advice?
That a lot of material does have to be mastered to really understand these, and therefore the advice is start early and complete the Cali lessons so that you have time to go back and review them. And if there is a weakness, for example, if this concept of equity is a problem, then look at the Cali lessons introducing equity in the remedy section.
Perfectly good suggestions.
Well, thank you both very much for your time. I've enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you so
much. Pleasure being here with you.